would have not have known that before hiring the person. So the individual is protected because they're notified before the information is given out. You as an individual employer could request the information if you needed it before hiring the person. I think it's a quite, quite a simple request and a worthwhile one.
But I want to ask that question.
Yes, another question.
Am I reading this accurately when I interpret what I've read here to mean that the part that's available is the arrest record? Also, that the person may never have been convicted of any kind of a crime. That person may only have been arrested, and there's an arrest record. Well, I'm reading on line 39 of page 4. For purposes of this paragraph, the record of an arrest or the report of the crime includes but is not limited to, and it goes on and lists about 9 more things of general information, and it speaks about an arrest record as well as a criminal record. A lot of people are arrested just the same way a lot of people are hailed before the Ethics Commission that may not be guilty.
I believe, Senator Burbidge, that's old language, and if you've been concerned about it before.
Well, but before it was protected, now it won't be.
No further comments, Mr. Chairman, okay, unless they're asked for.
Yes. Senator Gardner.
This is the same. I thought I recognized this bill. This is the same as the old Senate Bill 2, which we passed in the Senate last time. And it's basically a way of centralizing this information. You can go out to the counties and get it painstakingly, but this is a way of getting it more quickly. And that did pass the Senate last time. So
that's right.
I'm just raising some questions. Yeah. I don't know how I... I suppose I may support it when I'm totally informed on it after the bill's discussed on the Senate floor. I am a little concerned that for an employer to make a decision on whether or not a person ought to be hired is whether or not he got arrested by some zealous officer from Portland Police Department that rounded up a lot of erroneous information, and there's all kinds of lawsuits going on right now about that kind of activity. And I'm not so sure that that kind of stuff ought to be the basis for which people ought to be evaluated for employment.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Representative Katz.
Senator Burbidge, I was concerned with that too. However, take a look on line 36. They refer back.
On what page?
On the same page that you're in. They refer back to the record of arrest, and it appears, unless one of the lawyers can clarify that, it appears that it's just repeated further down. But there was the ability of getting that information when the original Senate bill passed. That's current law. Just recites it again, it appears to me.
The black, bold type.
No. I'm look at 36.
What page, please?
Page 4.
You could get the record of arrest by going to the state police office or the sheriff's office anytime, according to an attorney general's opinion a while back. It was a public record. The record of arrest was a public record, but the place you had to get it was where the guy was arrested and booked. That was also put on a computer, which compiled it all together, and apparently the purpose of this bill is to get all 36 counties plus every sheriff or state police.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
He didn't want it going on.
Any more questions? If not, Rick, call the roll, please, on House Bill 2682, report to the House as amended.
Senators Burbidge.
Aye.
Pott.
Aye.
Ripper.
Aye.
Meeker.
Aye.
Thorne.
Aye.
Roberts.
Aye.
Gardner.
Unless
and
so long as
there's a clear need.
Aye.
Representative Katz.
Aye.
Cherry.
Aye.
Simpson.
Aye.
Van Lee.
Aye.
Jones.
Aye.
Riebel.
Aye.
Presiding Chairman.
Aye. House Bill 2682 will report to the House for due pass as amended.
It's confidential. I want to explain my
yes.
vote.
Senator
I voted,
Burbidge.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I voted aye on this bill to get it out of committee to fulfill a promise that I made to the representatives of the telephone company that I would vote that way. I still have some reservations about it, and they may be able to satisfy them at the time that it finally gets to.
Senator Burbidge, I'm assured by nods of the head in the background that you will be contacted with your concerns. Is there any announcements?
Sub 2 meets tomorrow morning.
Sub 2 tomorrow morning?
House bill.
I was simply wanting to make public the fact that a couple of three bills would be going back to subcommittee at request, and the reason I'm mentioning it is so that no one will think there's anything more involved than there is. There are things where loose ends need to be tied up to fit the budget with action that has happened. The DEQ, the Office of the Governor, and the Coordinating Commission are the three that will be sent back because of loose end problems since they were working on it.
We're going to cut out the ECC.
Senator Burbidge?
Salary subcommittee is scheduled to meet tomorrow morning at 8 o'clock.
Okay. I believe the Senate is asked to go quickly to the floor. I believe we're adjourned.
EQ, Representative Jones.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Department of Environmental Quality. In January, the Data Processing Committee and the Emergency Board authorized the Department of Environmental Quality to seek federal funding to purchase and install data processing equipment. That grant application was successful, and the department has made arrangements to acquire the equipment. To complete the acquisition, the federal funds expenditure limitation increased in the amount of $116,000 for 1979-81 biennium is necessary. The department has been relying upon other facilities, primarily those of the Pacific Power and Light, for its data processing needs. Pacific Power and Light has asked the department to make other arrangements, and the acquisition of new equipment will overcome this problem. The equipment promises some operating savings, and the department's recommended 1981-83 general fund budget has been reduced accordingly. This amendment does not affect the recommended 1981-83 budget, which has been filed with the full committee. That's a little side note there. The committee's budget provides for a reduced level program for the department of environmental quality. For comparison, the current level of staffing is reduced by 44 positions from the current level of 333 down to 289. Total expenditures are increased less than 1% over 1979-81 estimates, and general fund expenditures are 79% of the 79-81 estimates. Some of the general fund reduction shown in the recommended budget is offset by additional fee income. The committee is recommending that the cost of administering the Pollution Control Fund be financed by users of the fund in lieu of general fund financing, and that a $247,000 general fund subsidy to the motor vehicles testing program be recovered. This recovery anticipates passage of House Bill 2289, which increases testing fees for motor vehicle emissions testing. The recommended budget also reflects anticipated changes in federal revenue. Based on the most recent information available, federal reductions will not affect the basic air and water program. Federal funding for noise control is reduced slightly. Section 208 water quality planning will be eliminated, and additional funding for hazardous waste will be used to soften solid waste reductions. Overall, these federal reductions total $387,000. The Pollution Control Bond Fund was reviewed in some detail by the committee, and some changes in management of that fund are reflected in the amendments to Senate Bill 142. In addition, the committee directed the department to manage the fund in a manner which assures that local jurisdictions which have no further other financing alternatives will have access to pollution control funds. This discretion will require the department to make a more careful examination of projected needs during the 81-83 biennium. Based on current projections, the policy should not preclude pollution control financing for any project scheduled for 1981-83. Recommend approval, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Jones moves that the Department of Environmental Quality Budget 5041 be sent to the floor of the House, do pass as amended. The only change since we heard it before was in the federal funds for the 79 biennium. Discussion of his motion. Call the roll.
Excuse me, Chairman.
Did you just going to comment? He sold him your way.
Mr. Chairman.
Like an auctioneer.
Is the motion, in fact, Mr. Chairman, to send to the floor or to file?
It is the motion that I stated, to send it to the floor of the House. The only change that has been made since it was filed earlier was the federal funds limitation for the 79 biennium. Representative Jones was good enough to go through the entire explanation since we were going to put it out. Further discussion. Call the roll.
Representatives Katz. Cherry.
Aye.
Lindquist.
Aye.
Simpson.
No.
Van Vliet.
Aye.
Jones.
Aye.
Riebel.
No.
Gilmore.
Aye.
Senators Burbidge.
Aye.
Potts.
Aye.
Thorne.
Aye.
Roberts.
Aye.
Gardner.
Aye.
Presiding Chairman.
Aye.
Kansas here.
DQ's budget.
DQ.
DQ budget.
We didn't change. Aye.
Katz votes aye. Motion adopted. Senate Bill 281, Senator Burbidge.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senate Bill 281 changes the current law concerning limited and temporary permits for radiological technology. The bill requires that all limited permit applicants must pass an examination in radiation use and safety and positioning techniques. Temporary permits would be limited to 3 months instead of the present six months, and applicants would be required to enroll in an approved course for instruction in radiation use and safety. This course consists of 20 hours of instruction. After 3 months, the person would be required to take and pass the examination for a limited permit. The bill reduces the cost of a temporary permit from $35 to $20, which it is estimated will reduce fee revenues by $2,375. Costs associated with development and administration of the examination will be minimal, since board members and other volunteers will be used. The board's ending balance is adequate to absorb both and still provide for the contingencies. It's out of your Committee on Human Resources with a unanimous vote.
Questions? Discussion? The motion is that Senate Bill 281 be reported to the Senate to pass with the amendments by the Substantive Committee.
Also called the Substantive Committee.
Any call the roll.
Representatives Katz.
Aye.
Cherry.
Aye.
Lindquist.
Aye.
Simpson.
Aye.
Van Vliet.
Aye.
Jones.
Aye.
Riebel.
Aye.
Gilmore.
No.
Senator Burbidge.
Aye.
Potts.
Aye.
Thorne.
Aye.
Roberts.
Aye.
Gardner.
Aye.
Presiding Chairman.
Aye. Motion is adopted. Senate Bill 482, Public Employees Retirement. Senator Burbidge has offered to pass. Senator Ripper is here on 482. Senator Ripper moves that Senate Bill 482 be reported out to the Senate, do pass with the amendments attached to the agenda.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senate Bill 482 authorizes a limited number of employees to buy back foregone years of service for purpose of the retirement benefit calculations under the Public Employees Retirement System. Sections 1 through 6 allow some 8 or 9 individuals to qualify for past years of service by repaying contributions, usually plus interest. These cases all involve rather exceptional circumstances that the committee felt warranted this consideration. The bill further permits legislative members who have not already done so to qualify for years of legislative membership prior to their joining the system. Finally, the bill provides for purchase of service credits by employees whose employment was interrupted by the Korean War military service. This provision is consistent with those accorded state employee veterans of World Wars I and II. The bill in each instance narrowly defines eligibility and a period of time which the option can be exercised. In terms of the overall retirement fund, the cost is negligible. Some people inadvertently through either their own fault or through advice given to them not to pick up or not to buy back their Korean War time. It's not in full accord with the board, but the committee felt that these were exceptional circumstances and that there were these few people that we were talking about that maybe were treated unfairly and that we ought to give them that opportunity to buy back in. I think that's about it.
Discussion.
Mr. Chairman. Senator Ripper, there was also a few people during World War II that had been left out in another bill that was covered. It was we had in our possession. Is that included? Take care of those people now too.
World War II.
World War II.
Believe it or not. Sure, whether we. Okay, did we? I don't think we had any World War II people.
Had worked over in the revenue department that had lost some time in the World War II period in which they had just lost retirement period.
The revenue department individual was taken care of, but that's Korea, isn't it? That's not World War II.
Was it Korea?
Korea. Yeah.
We dealt with the only problems that were brought to the subcommittee, and those were for veterans of the Korean War who served since 1950. There were two retired police officers who also received benefits, buyback benefits, similar to those accorded active members last time, and some of those may have been because of military duty.
Thank you, Kay. I just have my wars mixed up.
They would have covered under that anyway, because 1946 assistance started. This would pick up those that were not advised to buy back until back we're told that, well, it doesn't make any difference. And then, of course, we had last year, as you remember, we picked up a number of those people that were given what they called the pink slip or whatever color slip it was, blue slip or yellow slip or something. And this was for those few that were missed under that bill.
Representative Jones.
Now, Senator Ripper, I missed it last meeting when this bill came out. Apparently, how many people are we talking about? We're just roughly
8 or 9. And how many would be in the Korean, we don't know, but it would be a very limited number. It would not, there would be really a negligible effect. It would be so small that you're not talking about any great effect on the fund. If I recall right, they couldn't tell us exactly how many were in the war in Korea, but they felt it was a very, very small number. The others we can identify.
Further discussion. Please call the roll.
Representatives Katz.
Aye.
Cherry.
Aye.
Lindquist.
Aye.
Simpson.
Aye.
Van Vliet.
Aye.
Jones.
Aye.
Riebel.
Aye.
Gilmore.
Aye.
Senators Burbidge.
Aye.
Potts.
Aye.
Ripper.
Aye.
Meeker. Thorne.
Yeah.
Roberts.
Aye.
Gardner.
Aye.
Presiding Chairman.
Does he have to give it?
It is adopted. House Bill 2015, Representative Lindquist.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. House Bill 2015 allows the Housing Division of the Department of Commerce to establish a program of home improvement loans for low-income persons. It limits the issuance of revenue bonds to provide loan funds to no more than $10 million. The amendments by the committee are primarily housekeeping, except on page 7, lines 20 through 24 were deleted. This section primarily continuously appropriated the sum of $100,000 from the general fund to provide the division with security against any losses. A home improvement loan reserve account with the $100,000 can be managed within the existing other fund's revenue for this purposes. On page 6, line 3, the words federally insured or guaranteed was added to be part of the loans to be made under this act.
Questions of Representative Lindquist. Discussion of the motion to report 2015 to the floor of the House with the amendments on the printed agenda. Call the roll.
Representatives Katz.
Aye.
Cherry.
Aye.
Lindquist.
Aye.
Simpson.
Aye.
Van Vliet.
Aye.
Jones.
Aye.
Riebel.
Aye.
Gilmore.
Aye.
Senators Burbidge.
Aye.
Potts.
Aye.
Ripper.
Aye.
Meeker.
Aye.
Thorne.
Aye.
Roberts.
Aye.
Gardner.
Aye.
Presiding Chairman.
Aye. It is adopted. Mm-hmm. House Bill 2259, Energy, Representative Lindquist.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The major feature of House Bill 2259 is a mechanism which is intended and has been designed to avoid potential problems associated with using energy suppliers' assessments to finance the Department of Energy. The Department assesses the suppliers of electricity, petroleum, and natural gas to finance many of its activities. in the adopted 81-83 budget, exclusive of the governor's special energy package, anticipates receipt of $2.7 million from this source. However, because of ballot measure 3, which was passed in November of 1980, there is some doubt as to whether or not assessments obtained from oil and natural gas suppliers can be used for such purposes. Ballot measure 3 amended the Constitution to require the proceeds from any tax levied or measured by the use of or sale of oil or natural gas, which must be dedicated to the Common School Fund. The Attorney General has reviewed this issue and indicates that he feels the Department of Energy's assessments are not subject to constitutional dedication, but that he also has substantial doubts. As a result, House Bill 2259A has been carefully designed to limit to the extent possible the state's exposure to financial risk. The bill sets out a preferred method of assessment to be used until a Supreme Court indicates that it cannot be used. If the Supreme Court rules that the preferred method cannot be used, a fallback provision is included. However, it should be emphasized that all risk has not been removed. Other aspects of the budget include, number one, an increase in fees paid by nuclear facilities for regulation, which will avoid subsidizing this regulation from other revenue sources. Number two, an exclusion for small energy suppliers who will pay less than $250 per year. This exclusion will affect six suppliers and will have no appreciable impact on the department, as $250 is approximate break-even point for the assessment collection. And number three, a penalty provision is included which is intended to enable the Department of Energy to improve the collection of assessments. Now, this is not the special energy package. This is just for the regular Department of Energy budget and because of the constitutional amendment.
Ask a question.
Senator Burbidge.
Who do the exclusions apply to?
They're propane gas people. I believe that's all. Is that right, Dan?
A couple of electrical utilities, one
that's
small
right.
oil dealer, and a couple of
propane. Who are the electrical utilities?
Pardon me?
Who are the electrical utilities? I don't even recall the names.
Clearwater is one of them.
They're very small.
They're private companies.
Currently about $40. All six of them
amount to less than $600. As I said, this costs more to collect it than it's worth on those amounts.
Thank you. I think Senator Thorne has a question, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chairman, as I'm trying to catch up to the amendments, and I see in several instances where you've deleted a larger figure than the one that you've inserted, or in other words, you've deleted a large figure and inserted a small figure, primarily dollars. Maybe you could tell me, then I see on line 36 you delete a half a
which
cent and insert 0.25. Can you tell me what the thrust of the amendment?
Which page are you on, Senator?
Well, I think I've started on page one of the amendments.
I'm looking at the bill.
There's so many amendments I think that I can't get them all put in the bill as quickly as I'd like.
Why don't you tell him, Dan? I can't tell where he's at.
Okay, there's two parts of that. One of them is an application fee. And the concern was that the existing language sets a minimum fee of $15,000. The committee wanted to make sure that that was not prohibitive and different language was inserted. It goes on to say that the amount will be recovered as set out in the approved budget for the department. The other change that we refer to, going from a nickel to 25 cents per kilowatt, is for the cost of regulating Trojan nuclear sites. Currently, energy suppliers are subsidizing the cost of that regulation. And in order for it to be self-sustaining, that amount has to be up to a maximum of 25 cents. It won't go to that. But the intention is that the entire cost of regulation will be recovered through an assessment to the entity that's being regulated.
Okay, so the intent of that amendment from nickel to 25 cents that you referred to is to is more equally equate the cost of that regulation to the particular segment of our utility system that's providing the energy.
Exactly.
Mr. Chairman, may I ask, is the thrust of the amendments in addition to reducing some of the application fees and the one just referred to, is that the thrust of the amendments? Two items, reducing the initial application costs and equating or trying to balance the cost of the program with the service being rendered or received, I should say.
I think you could say that's the major objective, yes. Go ahead, Dan.
Well, you're not reducing the application. You're simply dropping the minimum fee down so that smaller applications will not be disturbed. The entire cost of the application will be recovered.
Might I ask one more?
Surely.
The assessments then, I know there's another energy bill, and I don't want to confuse the issue, but can you briefly tell me how we assess the various utilities and how it's affected in this bill? Is it possible to answer that question rather briefly?
Currently, you assess electricity, petroleum, natural gas on the basis of BTU. That method of assessment comes into question because of dollar figure measure 3. What this does is set out BTU as a preferred method of assessment, and it continues that until the Supreme Court, there's another mechanism in there to get it in the Supreme Court, rules that that is not allowed for constitution. At that point, then there's a fallback provision of the bill that would assess those same energy sources on the basis of gross operating revenue. Now, that this is only the method of collecting the money. The amount collected is determined by the amount of budget that you put out. So far, the Department of Energy budget has gone out and includes $2.7 million in energy suppliers. All of the other things that will come about, or may come about, as a result of legislation will be in addition to that $2.7 million. This tells you how you collect those dollars.
Final question then, does this new formula, BTUs, versus how the assessments were made, maintain equity or tip it in one way or other? Is the formula essentially the same? The
formula is intended to be the same. The preferred method continues what we're doing now.
And the amount of money that gets assessed is related to how much we let the Department of Energy spend in their budget.
I understand that.
Yeah. In each case, Senator, it weighs those two formulas, and whichever is less is the one that's assessed that energy supplier. In other words, so we don't have to, if whatever the Supreme Court decides, we don't have to pay them back, because we'll only be assessing them the least of whichever formula it is. That may be confusing, but that was the best the attorneys could work out in this.
Beg your pardon?
Yeah. Keep us out of court, maybe.
Sounds like a couple of federal tax attorneys. only difference is that when you figure tax two different ways, sometimes you don't get to pay the lesser.
That's the problem there, yeah.
Is there further discussion of this with the amendments? I want to ask a question about 7 and 8 if there's no further discussion. Section 7 and 8 on page 9 talk about an energy information system.
Yes.
That's an existing bill and not in your committee's amendments, of course, Representative Lindquist.
Well, yes. The special, let's see, how can I say that? The Energy Committee added that back in. And we took it back out. That was another bill
we thought that if it's going to be done, it should be done in the special energy package and not in this bill, because this bill was specifically to take care of the constitutional problem and to drive the budget. I can't recall what the bill was, Senator, that was in originally, but it was an attempt by the House Energy Committee to put it in this bill, and we said that issue should not be part of this. This is too important an issue to be bogged down with another issue added to it, and we pulled those amendments back out. The committee recommended they go with the special task force effort. I can't recall the number of that bill. It's still in the two co-chairmen's hands, and it be added to that bill and not be in this one.
So if my bill were hand engrossed on page 9, I'd find the existing lines 6 through 39 at the bottom of the page have been deleted.
That's correct.
Thank you. Further discussion.
One question on the penalty. Why was the penalty system put in the bill as it is structured? There probably was a reason for the 2% per month. I think that's the way the penalty goes. A penalty of 2% of the fee per month. And you see that in two or three places in the bill. Page 5, bottom, there's another reference to...
It was done by the Energy Committee, and I don't recall exactly what we were told about that. Dan, Jim.
Well, Mr. Chairman, there was a portion of this bill responding to the question that was expressed by the subcommittee that reviewed this budget. The bill extends the assessment to more petroleum fuel.
The study's one thing. The second thing.
And in order to improve the department's ability to collect excessively financing for it, penalty provision was put in. And that's the result of that is that if you're collecting from everybody that owes, then people that are already paying don't have to pay more than their program.
Any further discussion?
I'm trying to get a feel for what that penalty is, Mr. Chairman. If we're talking about, that's 2% per month of the total assessment due. Is that correct?
That's about what the usury lid's going to be when you take it off.
Sure.
Yeah. So it is.
If that's simple, Embers, obviously, it's one thing.
1.5% now that's in the usury law, you're taking the usury lid off, that's just about fit in there good.
And if you pay the penalty, I'm not talking about usury, I'm talking about the assessment here. But
yes. Well, you're talking about interest, that's the thing.
I prefer Senator Potts's reference to the interest.
Well, that's
my question is if...
We get a chance to that bill at 10 o'clock. Go ahead.
My question is if... If the payment is a month and 5 days late, is the penalty 4% or is it prorated?
Be easy to make the argument either way, Mike.
It doesn't do it.
It doesn't say. It doesn't say.
I think you'd have to be the full 60 days before you get the second effort.
You think so?
I do.
It doesn't say that. But
no, there's some ambiguity. I agree with you. You could argue it either way, but I think that since it says by the month rather than 30 days, you wouldn't have the second month unit until you had had 60 days. 62 days, if it was the right months. further discussion. Please call the roll on the motion.
Representatives Katz.
Aye.
Cherry.
Aye.
Lindquist.
Aye.
Simpson.
Aye.
Van Vliet.
Aye.
Jones.
Aye.
Riebel.
Aye.
Gilmore.
Aye.
Senators Burbage.
Aye.
Potts.
Aye.
Ripper.
Aye.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear that.
Aye.
Meeker.
Aye.
Thorne.
No.
Roberts.
Aye.
Gardner.
Aye.
Presiding Chairman.
A smarter vote than mine.
Aye. 2306, Representative Katz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. House Bill 2306 makes parents of children under 18 years of age and spouses responsible for a portion of the cost of care in state institutions for the mentally ill and the mentally retarded. As amended by the committee, it also makes parents of children at the schools for the blind and the deaf financially responsible when and if such charges conform to federal law. The bill establishes a maximum payment schedule, which is based upon adjusted gross income in relation to the median adjusted gross income in the state, and a percentage of the standard exemption for a child. For example, if a family had an adjusted gross income of $12,000, their maximum charge would be $21 per month, or 2% of income. A family with income of $24,000 would have a maximum charge of $83 per month, or 4% of income. If a responsible relative is unable to pay the amount indicated by the schedule, the division would then review and make a determination regarding ability to pay, taking into consideration such factors as size of family, essential living expenses, and other mitigating circumstances. The bill also requires development of rules to ensure third-party billings were appropriate and use of funds from this source to offset up to 50% of the responsible relative's annual liability.